All right. Well, if you can depend on the award-winning For the People for anything, it's our ability to build relationships with fantastic resources. And right now, while we're hearing what I hope is a good news in terms of trending regarding fentanyl overdoses, it is still a devastating and drug and a critical issue to talk about. A little over a week ago on August 21st, it was Fentanyl Awareness Day. However, today, as we play this program, it is International Overdose Awareness Day. So we're tapping our partners at McCall's Behavioral Health and bringing a new friend from their organization into ours here, just for your benefit. Kyle Fitzmaurice is here, and he is a harm reduction coordinator for McCall's. So good morning to you, Kyle. How you doing?
Good morning to you, John. I'm doing fabulous.
Fantastic. So let's give folks a quick and brief reminder of what McCall's Behavioral Health Network is and how your role as harm reduction coordinator fits into it.
Oh, gosh. So obviously, you know, it's in the name McCall Behavioral Health Network. We have been growing every pieces that we work with. But I think when it comes down to it, we really center on connection and working alongside and walking alongside people in the community. So in my specific role, there's a few different, you know, pieces or facets that I do, but I think my favorite is that I get to work with people who are using drugs. And, you know, I think in a lot of contexts in the past, we talk about like helping people get into treatment. And while that is definitely something that I'm able to help with, another part of it is just realizing that sometimes people aren't ready for change just yet, and they deserve compassion and care and empathy. So I get to walk alongside people on their journey and support them in whatever, you know, whatever they deem necessary. And along with that, you know, as like the harm reduction coordinator, there's some programmatic stuff that I get to help along with as well.
So not to get into too fine a specific, but can you talk a little bit about the communities from which your client base is coming, are coming from, to work with you and your team at McCall's?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's kind of interesting. I think, you know, we have this narrative from a few different sources that people who use drugs look one type of way. And if you drink coffee, smoke cigarettes or vape or go to the bar, you use drugs. So I work with a lot of different community, you know, communities, and they look like, you know, such a variety of people, it's hard to narrow it down to one thing. But locally, we work in Litchfield County, and McCall is kind of stretching into Region 5 or Western Connecticut.
Okay, very good. So as we mentioned, Fentanyl Awareness Day was August 21st, and today is International Overdose Awareness Day. The two kind of, unfortunately, sadly, can be talked about, you know, in the same sentence, because fentanyl has played such a huge role in the number of overdoses and sadly the number of overdose deaths that we have suffered here in Connecticut and across the nation for now well over a decade. I guess we hit our high point in 23-24, and we're beginning to start seeing a little bit of downtrending. Is that something you're kind of white knuckling your way through, hoping that it's not just a momentary kind of rollback?
Yeah, I think, you know, kind of harm reductionists in the area are really cognizant of the fact that history repeats itself. And when we think about what happened in the past, you know, as we see these changes and, you know, reductions, we also see, like, you know, we all know that there's been a little bit more crackdowns on drugs as of late. And while that feels like it's forward progress, more often than not, when that happens, we see the supply change, which is when it becomes most dangerous. So right now we're seeing a little bit of a lull in overdose deaths, which is really exciting. But I think a large part of that is because of how much work Connecticut has been doing to get the naloxone saturation rate up. So, you know, they, Department of Mental Health and Department of Public Health, you know, they look at our communities and say, you know, there's X amount of community members in the state, and if we could hit this number, I think it's, I believe it's 80% of witnessed overdoses will have Narcan at it. And in my area, we've been able to hit that. And, you know, I think that's a big part of what we're seeing is documented overdose deaths are not happening as much. That's not to say, though, that overdoses are down. So I think that's where, you know, I love to say prevention looks like nothing's happening. So behind the scenes, you know, it might be a different story. We might be having even more overdoses that we don't see because they're happening in the community and they're being supported by people and, you know, revived by people who are using drugs or who see them and may not be calling 911.
Yeah.
So while overdose deaths are down, which is wonderful, we can't say the same about overdoses, period.
Yeah. Well, we also saw a lot of traction in the latest Connecticut legislative session on these supervised and controlled injection sites, nearly coming to fruition on a pilot basis. Now, no way am I suggesting that McCall's or even you endorse this as a political or public health movement, but that's got to be something that's been on the radar of you and your harm reduction colleagues, essentially since they got introduced and became quite successful in Europe and other countries.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think when we get right down to it, overdose prevention centers save lives, period. You know, and I think when we talk about what's important in this conversation, it's the fact that people are dying. And when we can say, you know, here's the thing that's important, right? It's the fact that we're losing people. And here's this easy solvent that we can do that will, without a doubt, save lives. There's not much more to the conversation, in my opinion, right? We have to preserve human life. And I think it's as easy as that. So, there's a lot of wonderful things that have come out of overdose prevention centers. That's really exciting. But I know, like, the context of this conversation today is more centered around, like, you know, fentanyl and
right.
Kind of some of that misinformation. But, you know, there is a lot that can happen in our communities with overdose prevention centers.
Right, because when people go to these sites with whatever it is they're using, they are offered the opportunity to test the substance for fentanyl.
I can say that I encourage your listeners to do some research because it, you know, what feels like it's helping, you know, like this arrest and, you know, punitive measures, and what we've been told helps isn't always the narrative that is actually true. And we've just been doing it for so long, it feels like the thing that we should keep doing. But, you know, it's been decades of this same thing of arrest and shame and judgment towards people who use drugs. And what we've seen is really no change in the addiction rates across the nation and increased overdose deaths. So, you know, overdose prevention centers, they're cost effective. They center on connection, and they actually increase access to treatment and care. They already exist, which I think is like something that we have to talk about, right? This isn't we're not recreating the wheel here.
Sure.
This is stuff that is tried and true and has actually in those communities really helped. And it also reduces, like, you know, public consumption and litter. So,
virtual. Let's just, by the way, nearly 100% success rate when it comes to preventing overdose deaths, right?
Right. So I personally am not aware of any overdose deaths that have occurred from an OPC. Now, I will say overdoses, I'm sure, happen there.
Sure.
But they're revived because there's people on standby to help.
Yep.
And I think that's the, when it comes down to, like, this conversation, the reason that people are dying in our communities is because typically they're using alone. And that really comes down to shame. We can't talk about the folks that use drugs, right? They don't feel like they can come to their family members or loved ones and say, hey, I'm doing X, Y, and Z, because as a society, we shame that. And we look down on and we think of them as less than. And I think, like, you know, even, right, we arrest people who use drugs. And that narrative, that action is saying, hey, when you arrest somebody, right, who do you arrest? You arrest the bad guys.
Right, criminals.
And you arrest criminals. And when we think about why people use drugs, it could be for a variety of reasons. You know, it's, again, kind of how it started. for, you know, alcohol, it's kind of the same concept, right? You might be using drugs at a party. You might be using drugs to have fun.
Or because your doctor told you.
Right. Or you might be using drugs because you have, you know, severe pain.
Yeah.
Or it could be, and I think this is when we start to talk more about substance use disorders, which McCall Behavioral Health Network obviously specializes in, is pain and trauma and what happens when we isolate people.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of studies out there that really say that those old methods of arrest and punishment and or even forced treatment do not work.
Mm.
It has to be centered on connection and compassion and really meeting people where they're at.
Yeah. Well, as we cross the midpoint of our conversation here, Kyle, let's get into some of the nuts and bolts of making sure our listeners are as educated as they possibly can be. I know the initial outreach here was over some YouTube videos that onerously suggested that, you know, sort of even looking at fentanyl could kill you, basically. And no joking around. So let's get into a very brief kind of a, you know, Sunday morning easy science lesson about what fentanyl is.
Sure. So, you know, I think just to start out, fentanyl has been around since around the 60s, and it's still used in medical practices today. It's really common for doctors to, you know, like use fentanyl for their patients.
Mm.
And so I think that we have this kind of idea where we're like demonizing the drug, fentanyl. And I can say without a shadow of a doubt, touching fentanyl, you know, being near fentanyl, you are not at risk of death. If you ingest fentanyl, that might be a different conversation, right? If you like use, you know, if you inject it or you sniff it or, you know, any of those things where it enters your body, you may be at risk of overdose or death. But when you're in the presence of fentanyl, when it's in the room, if there's an open bag of it, if it's on your skin or in your hand, that's not necessarily the case. So, and I think this is where, you know, I've seen a lot of videos where you see, you know, especially first responders, during traffic stops, and you see them, what looks like an overdose. And I think when we talk about overdoses, for the folks who might not know, overdose symptoms are blue lips and fingertips. A person might not be responding. They might not be breathing, or it might be a really shallow, ragged breathing, and their pupils are really pinpointed.
Mm.
And what you see in a lot of these other videos, right, when you have like that quote-unquote overdose with a first responder, they're talking. More often than not, they're actually asking for Narcan, they're breathing kind of at a different rate than what an overdose would look like. And I don't want to, you know, draw this. This is not to cast judgment or shame or anything like that. But what they're really experiencing is a very human reaction to fear,
mm-hmm.
and it's more closely resembles a panic attack. I can definitely outline that. The idea of death is scary. And when you have trusted people anywhere telling you this is what happens when you touch fentanyl or that you're near it, the brain is always more powerful than the body. And when you believe something wholeheartedly, your body is going to react to it. So this isn't a willpower thing. This isn't, you know, like they're not, I don't believe that they're faking it. They're truly terrified and they think that they need Narcan.
Right.
But go ahead.
I was just saying, individuals like you, professionals in the harm reduction field, certainly are doing hard and great work. But your team at McCall has really stepped up to a new level here with this Community and Law Enforcement for Addiction Recovery Initiative.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that's where I started. I was actually one of the community engagement specialists, and I kind of moved into this role as a harm reduction coordinator. And I worked really closely with that team, and they're absolutely wonderful. And I think, you know, that partnership with our law enforcement is just, it's so wonderful because you get to have these conversations. Right. And I think that the importance of this conversation is that when we have this fear about people who use drugs, people are less likely to render aid. And when you see someone overdosing, you might have that fear of, you know, if I touch them, I might overdose. And that's just not true. But when that happens, people might not, you know, receive the care or help that they deserve. And we may lose people because of it. So that's a really big point of this conversation today is to say, hey, you know, it's not true. Being in the room, touching fentanyl, it's not going to cause an overdose.
And this peer-to-peer reinforcement is critical because, as folks know, even from listening to guests on this program, firefighters that are now inducted into the EMS world and are typically responding along with ambulances to medical emergencies, they're kind of within their own social circle. Obviously, law enforcement, police officers and such also have their own really strong and reinforcing circles of influence, as do emergency medical professionals. And to be able to develop a video and a program that provides this sort of a peer looking the other peer in the eye and saying, giving them the facts about fentanyl is critical.
Absolutely. Yeah, I completely agree. And I think that's what, has been so wonderful about programs like this, is that we get to partner with those folks and connect and have like real honest conversations. Mm.
So here we are, moving toward the end of our conversation on Overdose Awareness Day. Let's just get into some numbers, both at the national level and then zeroing into Connecticut. Let's talk about these trends that we're starting to hear about, these rollbacks. How many people have actually died from overdoses in the last measured year?
Yeah, so last year in Connecticut, we lost almost 1,000 people. Our state is small, and maybe to some, they might say that 1,000 feels like a relatively low number. But what I think about when I hear any number related to overdose deaths is how many loved ones or family members or friends are attached to that single loss. And we're talking about like high thousands, right? That really changes things. So I think when we talk about overdose deaths, it's hard to capture the amount of people who are affected by it.
Mm-hmm. So what can you share in terms of numbers looking here in Connecticut?
Yeah, so about 1,000 people died last year in Connecticut. And if you go on like the DPH website, there's a link you can follow that will bring you to like what drugs were related to those deaths.
Yeah.
And what I think is really important to note is that I want to touch just briefly on the Iron Law of Prohibition. And basically, the concept, if you've ever seen seen or read the book The Great Gatsby, it's kind of the same idea, right? 1920s, Prohibition, they said alcohol is illegal. And, what happened was really moonshining, right? The people didn't stop using alcohol. It just became unregulated.
Yeah, bathtub gin, yep.
Right. And it also became, it became stronger, right? It was really beer and wine predominantly before that. Yeah, and then Prohibition happened, and then it was stronger. So we're seeing the same thing when it comes to opiates. It was heroin. There was opium, crackdowns on opium, and then it went to heroin, right? And then it went from heroin to fentanyl, from fentanyl to nitazenes and carfentanil, and it continues to get smaller and stronger as we crack down on the one before it. Yeah. And we talked about this concept of the war on drugs, but we can't wage war on inanimate objects. It's the people who suffer when we wage war on an inanimate object. So when we talk about, the war on drugs, it's a war on people who use drugs more than it is the war on like a specific drug. Mm-hmm. If that makes any sense.
And it needs to be the war against the people who make the drugs, which is becoming part of the problem. When we're looking at 8 out of 10 related overdose deaths last year being tied to fentanyl in some way, shape, or form, the most insidious is the counterfeit pills. And I'm sorry we only have a couple more minutes to talk about this, but maybe it's a great way to end the conversation for now, Kyle. What are you seeing on the front line, and what is your team seeing in terms of the proportion of people, especially young people, who are taking the one time or the occasional intake of what they think is a drug that may help them or make them feel good, for a few hours or a little bit of time, and they end up dead.
Yeah. So I think I can start by saying, we're not going to really see a change until we see regulation. Crackdowns like this continue to, change the supply and cause things like this to happen. So until we can see drugs, just like alcohol become regulated, right? I can go to the store and I can buy a 5% beer, and I know that that beer is 5% every single time. Until that can happen, we're going to continue to see stuff like this happen. But I think when it comes down to it, right, for, I mean, like millennia, drug use has been part of culture, and it's not going to go anywhere, right? We can't hit the delete button on addiction or drug use. So what we have to do is conceptually understand that until we can see regulation or change on that level happen, people who are using drugs, even if it's pressed pills or, you know, whatever it is from the street, they need to have access to testing them and making sure they're safe. So fentanyl test strips, you know, things like that go a really long way in making sure that people know what they're using. And, you know, kind of going back to that, the website, the DPH thing that I was sharing about, you can see it's there's 1,000 people about who passed away, but the amount of substances attached to it are like much, much higher. And it's because it's not just one drug in the supply when someone passes away. It's called polysubstance use. You know, people are mixing, maybe packing on the same table, whatever it is, but there's more than one thing in the supply right now. And maybe I can end on kind of one of my favorite analogies when it comes to Narcan, if that works for you.
Yeah, sure.
So I love it when people talk about Narcan, and you know, sometimes we hear this idea that maybe people like made that choice to use drugs and they shouldn't receive it. And I would challenge that if you were on a boat and the boat was starting to sink, right? Someone should probably throw you a life raft. But you made that decision to get on the boat.
Yeah.
And, you know, you still deserve to live just because you got on the boat. And I think that's when we talk about Narcan is the life raft. Regardless of the decision, we need to prioritize human life before anything else. And Narcan, it's never dangerous, and it is proven to save countless lives. So if we're talking about fentanyl, if we're talking about opiates, if we're talking about drug use, Narcan, naloxone, it has to be part of the conversation, because that's how we see overdose deaths decrease, along with policy change.
And a great way to end the conversation here on International Overdose Awareness Day with Kyle Fitzmaurice, our newest partner in health. He's a harm reduction specialist with McCall Behavioral Health Network. They specialize in helping individuals heal from substance use disorders, mental health disorders, or both. They focus on a person's emotional and behavioral health together to build a strong and more resilient community throughout Connecticut. Kyle, we thank you so much. Folks, if you want to learn more about this organization or avail yourself or someone you love of their services, it's McCallBHN.org. That's McCall with 2 C's, 2 L's, BHN.org. Kyle, great to meet you, and look forward to learning more from you again.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.